Yeah, so I think what we do is that we get 50 of the world's biggest podcasters together and we do just one like giant podcast to like feed kids in Africa. And it goes for 4.5 hours. I've got Joe Rogan. And he brought Jordan Peterson, and we've got Andrew Tate, Dana Carvey, and David Spade on board.
This sounds awful.
Yeah, it's going to be the worst podcast of all time, but so it's like for charity, awful, so awful everyone podcast. Will have to.
Nah. Sounds awful.
Yeah.
I don't like a lot of those people.
I was surprised that Joe Rogan and all his buddies got on board for something for charity, but anyway.
Sometimes.
Yeah. I don't think they understand what the word charity means, so.
Sometimes, like, a Joe Rogan clip will come across my TikTok and it's always something to do with, like, a conspiracy theory. And
he's so hard to get away from.
I'm on board because he'll have someone in going and, like, he'll have, like, Neil deGrasse Tyson going, did you know that the ancient Egyptians used to dig a certain hole that was based on the gravitational pull of the earth? And I'm like, this is incredible. And Rogan's, like, half-cooked going, wow.
Hmm.
Wow. And that stuff I like. I like that stuff. Give me like people. And there's who's the other guy that comes in that has like the weird face with the big teeth? And he comes in and he's like I don't know if he's like a physicist, but he always talks about Earth and gravity and
how it's flat. And Joe Rogan's like, yeah.
No.
So we all know that the Earth's flat.
I don't think this guy is like he's like a white Neil deGrasse Tyson, I feel. And if he is like a cancelled person, I'm really, really sorry.
Well, if he's so on the Rogan Experience, he absolutely isn't a cancelled person.
But Neil deGrasse Tyson isn't.
That's where everyone goes. Russell Brand will be fucking co-hosting that podcast.
Fuck, Russell Brand is really fucked.
Like, what a complete. So
is he on Twitter, is he on Rogan now these days?
He goes on there.
It would make me feel so happy if Rogan turned around and went, nah, even that guy's too cooked for me.
No, they're exactly the same. They spew the same fucking bullshit. It's all anti-vax this and that and blah, 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 blah. Yeah, man, Joe Rogan, he's got a lot to answer for. Unleash fucking Jordan Peterson and Andrew Tate on the world, you know.
I don't know who Jordan Peterson is.
Jordan Peterson is a philosophy. He likes to think of himself as a philosopher. He's from Toronto, and he thinks that all the problems in the world are because of women and people not eating meat. And he has a weird little voice like this. And he cries a lot.
Jordan Peterson. Okay, so thank God it's definitely not the guy I'm thinking of.
I think Jordan Peterson's got some good things to say. I'm amazed you're not. Because I'm, like, into certain blokey stuff like pro wrestling and even just shows like Action Boys. There's a few Patreon podcasts I'm into, Doughboys, Patreon, Action Boys. The algorithm assumes that I would like all those guys. Mm. And it's so hard, like, on my YouTube and TikTok to get away from him.
Yeah.
It's like every fucking fourth thing is like, you'll like this, right? I'm like, no.
I know the guy.
How many times do I have to tell the algorithm I don't want any Joe Rogan at all? None of it.
So I know the guy that, and I really hope when I say his name that he's not a fucked person because I'm not saying I love him. I'm just saying sometimes I hear him talking about physics and like space and I'm interested.
It's a guy called
Brian
Joseph
Cox.
Goebbels?
No.
Oh, Brian Cox.
Yeah.
From Brian, the British
physicist
/ ex-keyboardist of Baby Bird.
Oh, really? I don't know about that.
He, remember the song?
Is he shit?
Because you're gorgeous.
Oh, is that him?
Is that right? Is that the band that he was in? I don't, actually, we'll now I'm out. Double guessing myself. He was in some pop band when he was a kid.
Definitely got the face. Yeah, physicist and musician. He definitely has the face of a weirdo music groups. Yeah, he looks like a James Blunt kind of guy.
Now he has this, I'm trying to get his voice.
Because that's how it happens, isn't it?
It's an English voice. He talks like this and everything's very up. Like all the sentences go up like this. Imagine, no, I'm not doing it good. He sounds like David Attenborough, but on E.
He was a keyboard player for D-Ream.
D-Ream.
Things can only get better. So, I mean, he's really like, he's a particle physicist. Like, he's PhD, like,
PATY.
Because I got
her. Cool, because I got her.
So I don't think he's no slouch, basically. He's no slouch.
He knows what he's talking about. And look, people...
And he's not bad, is
people,
he?
No.
No.
He hosts his own podcast called Infinite Monkey Cage that's with Robert Ince, comedian Robert Ince. It's quite funny and entertaining and stuff. Eric Idle goes on there a lot.
Yeah, I think it's...
So
yeah.
He's not... I think there's a lot of people who have the approach of like, if I go on Rogan...
Maybe and, I can just change
and then
the world.
I can put non-misinformation... I can put correct information on the podcast. And that's what makes Rogan difficult, I think, because he will have people like that on where... And people... So it legitimizes it somewhat. But then the next episode, he'll have Jordan Peterson on there for fucking 3.5 hours just spewing hatred and shit.
Yeah.
And like, that's, yeah. Anyway, this is, should we just watch it real quick? The only podcast that talks about physics and Joe Rogan exclusively. I am one of your hosts, Dr. Damian Gibson. I didn't go to Joe Rogan Podcasting School to be called Mr. Thank you very much. And in the blue corner, it's
the
Raging Cajun. It's the grumpy wedding planner. Get out of her way. She's got a bouquet of flowers and she knows how to use it. It is Kelly Big Whoop. Want to fight about a festuca. She can't even.
Thanks.
She can't
Thanks,
even.
Damien. Thanks,
she
Damien.
Can't even pretend to be in a good mood.
Thanks, Damien, for reminding me I don't have a wedding bouquet. I appreciate that.
Oh, you do.
I don't.
We'll just get one from Coles on the way down.
There's some roses in the back. Listen, we also have another guest here besides Jimby.
Dog update.
Mate, in the infinite.
Dog update.
In the infinite theme that is our show where we've always got a different dog.
Yes. Sometimes we don't, but it's rare.
Very rare. We've got a second dog. Her name's Jamie, and she's like, she's twitching her little nose as she's asleep on the couch, like I drew Jeannie.
Mm.
And she's another little Bing, foster. Ling, 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 ling. Yeah, she's another little foster dog from Starting Over Dog Rescue. She's a blue heeler cross Kelpie, but very much
so. She's a small, she's a small town country cop.
Small town country gal. But
no,
she's
cop.
More,
remember blue heelers? Remember blue heelers?
Oh, we're blue heelers, bloke. And Sheila's, but she's more blue heeler than anything else. And she's, I think now she's 13 weeks old now, and she's a baby. And now she's teething and she's biting, but she's fucking gorgeous. And she's asleep on the couch. No one make any sudden moves because she'll get up and just fucking piss and shit everywhere.
She will ruin this podcast,
dude. The amount of shoe collecting, it is psychopathic. She just like every time I see her, she's running past me with a different shoe in her mouth.
This summer,
the shoe collector.
Jamie is the shoe collector.
Row, row, row. Now, because we're trying to figure out what her inner voice is, because Jimmy's inner voice is very like, help.
That's not his inner voice. That's his voice. That's his voice. He's on the podcast from time to time.
Oh, I don't know why you keep on bringing home these fucking derelict foster dogs. I should be the only dog in the house.
Jim, you were a rescue.
Not anymore, cunt. Get rid of her. Get rid of her. Oh, she's waking up.
Oh, we've activated. Activated the sleeper cell.
Yeah, she's a little country dog, so I just feel like every time I look at her, she's like, hi, just going to get some shoes, wrangle them up, put them on the back of my ute, go for a drive, do a shit on the carpet. Go on my merry way.
No, that's what country people do, right? Yeah. They shit on the carpet. Mate.
Well, we only have one piece of carpet.
I don't know.
I've never
been to the country, but I assume that's what.
We have one rug in the house, in the living room. And
yeah, which is ruined.
It's like, it's we've just got to get rid of it, honestly. Ruined. Because she's not pissing or shitting everywhere else. She's being really good going outside. Sometimes she'll do a poo on the tiles because.
For a 13-week
puppy.
Let me, I've got something very important to say.
Like, she's toilet training, so she's going to do accidents in the house, you know, no big whoop, whatever.
Same as you.
I have accidents. I shit on the tiles all the time. But I think, you know, it's just something about this carpet where it's like.
Well, it's hideous for a start. I think she's trying to.
This carpet has been here how long?
Since the Sydney Olympics.
Okay, it's a 24-year-old carpet. I really think we should just get rid of it. Next hard rubbish. Why?
No, our landlord would be really unhappy
with that. No, it's fine. We can't, listen, it's just, it collects.
It's to protect the floorboards.
Dude, the floorboards are fucking done. They're old. How old are these floorboards?
Why are you having this conversation with me and why are you having it on the podcast?
Well, I need evidence.
What do you mean watching? Anyway, Jamie's beautiful and she'll be up for adoption at some point.
Check my Instagram. Name is, we call her Jamie because the name she was given we hate. Her real name is Nesta. Yeah. So when you see Nesta advertised, she will definitely need to be with, she's definitely going to need to be with a family that already has a dog, preferably an older, wiser, more tolerant dog who can teach her how to be a dog.
Anyway, you can get all these details from Kelly's Instagram, but she's named after AEW former world champion and strong woman Jamie Hayter. So what do you mean watching this week, Kelly, besides the two things that we watch for the podcast? Anything interesting? Let me guess. Grizzly murder documentaries?
I have an MO. I forgot the name of it.
You're either going to become a citizen lawyer or you a serial killer. It's one of the...
You know what's funny? I don't know if you remember a documentary called...
Or a citizen detective.
Well, I don't know if you remember a documentary... what's it called? You can't kill cats. Don't kill the cats or something.
Yes, I remember it being a phenomenon for like 2 weeks. Yeah.
And the reason why is because... There was a video on the internet of a guy who murdered cats on video and it was awful and horrific and people saw it and obviously, like, you know, you kill a cat on video, there's people in the internet ethos who are like, I'm going to hunt this fuck down and I'm going to kill him myself.
And then take those tapes and send them through to America's Funniest Home Videos.
Yeah. And that kind of mentality of people who go, oh, if you kill an animal, I'll kill you. I'm 100% on their side. I will go to law school, be a judge, just to make sure those people get off.
It's the John Wick argument.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
Your Honor, I'd like to present evidence number A. John Wick. We're going to watch the whole movie, though. Cut to an hour and a half. So you see, Your Honor, it's perfectly reasonable for someone to kill a whole bunch of people because your dog or cat got killed. Arrest my case.
I'm going to allow it. Not guilty.
I'll allow it. Not guilty. Yay.
Honestly. So the whole thing, the whole premise with that documentary is that people, based on the way the room looked and different people, like absolute regular everyday Joes being internet sleuth, not only found out who the original person was.
That looks like the Faulkner McDonald's.
Not only did I find out who did it. But they, in the process, were able to find out that he actually had murdered a human being, possibly more as well.
Mm.
So the cops didn't find him. The FBI didn't find him. Mm. There was a murder for a human being. And this guy finally got caught because these fucking internet sleuths found out who he was based on the video of him. And they didn't know at the time that the guy who killed the cats was also a serial killer.
Mm.
He was a serial killer. Anyway, so it's incredible stuff like that. But also there is a story at the moment happening in Melbourne where there's a Ballarat mum has gone missing, which is really sad. And the police have asked for people to stop playing detectives because they're interrupting the case. So people are ringing up the police with information and going, yeah, I think I saw this. Like they're ringing up thinking they're helping, giving information, and it's leading people on a wild goose chase, like the police. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, g'day, boys. Private investigator Shane.
Where do I live? Oh, I moved back in with Mum after the divorce. She took my kids.
I was at the town. I was at Broadie Square today, and I saw a guy. He went into JJ's, and he was in there for a good 15 minutes and didn't buy anything. So I just thought you guys would want to know about that. Okay. Shane, we've told you a million times that, one, the murder took place in Ballarat, so Broadmeadow Square hasn't got anything to do with anything, and people can go into stores and not buy stuff. I just thought you guys would want to check it out, okay? I'm busy. I've got cases to solve.
Yeah.
It would be worse in Australia than it would be anywhere else as well, though, because it would just be shit like that, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. I think, yeah.
I saw a guy with brown skin at the Ballarat Town Centre. You should look into that. You know, it would all be racist, like racial profiling like that.
The dog just make a weird... Ooh.
She's snoring.
She's snoring.
Yeah, she's snoring. Anyway, don't get distracted by the puppy.
Yes.
Yeah, so anyway, Ballarat Woman, what's this got to do with the TV shows that you're watching? What TV show are you watching?
So I'm watching a show. Well, I'm just saying that this horrible thing with a Ballarat woman, like no one knows what's happened to her and it's all this. Anyway, I'm just saying how police, you know, there's sleuths out there trying to, you know, and they're hindering that.
Please thing-o. Stop. Yeah.
Right. So, well, I mean, it's good to like call and be like, hey, this is like someone handed in this footage and it ended up not being her and it put them in the wrong direction and it wastes valuable time. Like, you just got to be careful. Anyway, so I'm just looking it up now. So I watched, there's a documentary on Netflix. Oh, fucking hell. You tell me, I'll find it. You tell me what you watched this week.
I watched the second episode of Masters of the Air and, still really enjoying it. I think Kelly would hate it even more, the second episode. This week has been, I've watched a lot of sport, so not really much that I can bring to the podcast, unfortunately. I'm trying to think if I've watched any movies or anything. I watched Dr. No, the first Bond film.
How was that?
With a very, very young Sean Connery. And it's, at first I was like, oh, this is going to be bad because it's set in the Caribbean. And I'm like, oh, God.
Oh, my God. How long did it take before someone went, a month?
No, there's none of that. But there is very much like, of course, they wouldn't
let black people have jobs back in those days.
Well, that's the thing, Bob. Like, there's essentially James Bond joins forces with this guy who's like a, he looks after the docks, so like a West Indian guy, Caribbean guy. Mm. But the way that he's spoken to and the way that he speaks to them is very much a like master servant kind of thing. But in 1963 in the Caribbean with a white English guy and a black West Indian dude, that's probably what would have happened. So I don't think the film is I don't think you could watch the film. Me personally, I didn't watch the film and go, ooh, what a terrible representation of things. Yeah. And of course, James Bond's the hero, so he's nice to all the black West Indian guys in the film. But it's batshit crazy. And that's the one where, like, the famous scene of, like, the gorgeous Bond girl coming out of the Caribbean ocean in, like, the white bikini with the knife.
Oh, yeah.
That, like, was reversed for Daniel Craig in the first one and stuff. But, look, I know that they're completely out of step with how we think about everything in 2024, but I just love, I love old Bond films. I love the suits. I love the cars. I love seeing, because they're all shot on location, they're travel logs as well, so you can see what Barbados looked like in 1963, you know, pretty well. You know, like the set pieces are great because everything's like, you know, there's no CGI or anything. Everything's practical. So
I love that. It feels a bit more authentic.
You know, and Sean, who I know is also problematic in a lot of ways as well, is just...
Just hit your woman in the face.
Sometimes a woman needs to be told twice. Yeah, bad. But in this film, he's so handsome. Like, he's just so handsome and charismatic and completely watchable. And he really hadn't done much before this. He'd only done one or two films. So, like, he commands the screen in a way. Him and Michael Caine were always, like...
Michael Caine.
Yeah. Were always these sort of wonders to me because, like, especially Connery, because Connery was a bodybuilder.
Oh, so really?
He was kind of, he won, like, Mr. Universe. And that's how he got into acting because he was a handsome, buff guy. So he was kind of like the prototype Arnie, you know? In fact, Schwarzenegger cites Connery as, like, a big influence on. Well, that's what I wanted to do. I saw Sean do it. I thought I could do the same thing. But yeah, Dr. No's great. I know a lot of people don't like the 60s Bond films because they're, you know, they're long and the pacing of 60s films are very quiet, you know, like that's the thing you notice most, especially in comparison to 2024 action films, where it's like in 2024 every film is just like constantly like at you of like watch me. There's a lot of room to breathe watching this film. Mm. Like, you know, there'll just be scenes of Sean like driving his beautiful car up to a, you know, a double agent's house in the middle of the hills of Barbados and stuff. And it doesn't need to be there, but it sets the scene and it, I don't know. I really enjoy, I've seen all these Bond films 1,000 times, but yeah, if you're looking for an old spy / action film, Dr. No's definitely worth it. Dr. No's a bit problematic as well because he's supposedly Chinese. It is the whitest man in the world. But he's not doing an accent. It's not Mickey Rooney at Breakfast at Tiffany's. He has like a clipped British accent and it's all like they sort of throw it away.
Hello, Mr. Bond. I am Chinese. Thank you.
Like, yeah, it's like, hello, Mr. Bond. It's very nice to meet you. Of course I'm Chinese. But like there's a throwaway line about him going to Cambridge or something like that. So that's like,
This is assimilated. Good Chinese boy. Good.
No, he's not. He's bad.
He's bad.
He's Dr.
But
No.
He's still good because he like got rid of the accent and stuff in 60s standards.
Not, it's not bad because he's not doing a Mickey Rooney.
Yeah.
Like R's for L's, yeah, you know, but, accent.
Yeah. But he
molded. The Chinese person's still bad, but like it's not as bad as, it's not as jarring as Mickey Rooney from Breakfast at Tiffany's, which was made the same year, I think.
Oh, boy. That's, yeah. I did watch a murder documentary, thank you, on Netflix. Of course you came through the door.
The Home of Kelly.
Yeah, you came through the door and as soon as you saw the documentary, you were like, like halfway through. I'm a type. Anyway, I always see memes where it's like, why do women have so much anxiety? And it cuts to like 2 a.m. in the morning and they're like watching a case file. Yeah, anyway,
you watch 14 hours of
women getting murdered. Anyway, this one's called Lover, Stalker, Killer. And I already kind of knew this story. When I saw the documentary was coming out, I was like, oh, great. Because I remember this story and I knew it. Basically, a guy, him and his wife, they got kids. They get separated. So he goes on Plenty of Fish to meet women. And he just meets this chick.
Plenty of Fish.
Back in the day. Yeah, 2012 and stuff.
Mate, the fucking trailer park of dating sites, yeah. Plenty of Fish.
It was before, like Tinder wasn't out. Like it was, this was
Plenty
before.
Of Fish is a step down from fucking OK Cupid.
It was before all those ones were there, right?
Apologies to anyone who's met their partner on either of those sites.
Right.
But you know it's true.
Yeah, so he went on Plenty of Fish and met this chick and they had a lot in common and they were kind of dating.
Fuck, sorry. That just makes me laugh. Sorry, yeah. Keep telling your story. I'm sorry.
So they were dating and it was very like, he was like, hey, I've just come out of a marriage, you know, my kids. And she's like, yeah, I've got kids too. Like she was very like, we're good. Like we don't have to move fast. Like, so they saw each other sporadically, like not a lot, you know,
yeah.
Every once in a while and they had good times, whatever. Blah, blah, blah. And then he was an auto mechanic and this chick came in to get her car fixed and they kind of hit it off and then nothing happened. And then a week later he was on the website and saw this customer again.
Yeah.
And was like, oh, I remember you. She's like, I remember you. So they went out for dinner. And then after dinner he was like, do you want to come back to my place? She was like, okay. And he had the same conversation with her where he's like, I'm not ready, blah, blah, blah.
Hmm.
And she's like, I agree. I'm cool. Anyway, so they were just at, they only just got to back to his house. And when they got there, there was a knock on the door. It was the other chick. She was like, hey, I left my jacket here 4 nights ago. Can I pick it up? I mean, the fact that she was there at, you know, midnight or 11 o'clock because she, you know, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so she interrupted this thing and he's like, he was really honest with her, honest with the other chick. The other chick goes, this is a bit weird. I'll leave. You know, yes, of course, you're dating other people. No big deal, right? So she left and then that was it. And then do you want me to give you a quick rundown of what happens? Jimmy's having a bit of a spaz.
Yeah, Jim's freaking out
because someone who lives 17 doors down just opened up a car door.
Yeah, Someone just opened a can of Coke in Essendon. So
that's funny. The one I said. That's good. Basically,
thanks, Bob.
So the customer chick, she was quite lovely. Like, she had kids. She had a little boy. God, he's so distracting, this idiot. So she, what did she do? They dated for like 2 weeks. And it was, the guy's like, honestly, we went on like five dates, maybe 4 dates in 2 weeks.
Mm.
And goes, and one day she slept over. And then he was like, went to work, kissed her goodbye. She's like, I'll let myself out. And then when he got to work, she texted him like a few hours later going, hey, you know, this isn't working for me. I want a relationship. And he's like, I told you I can't give you that. Like, you know what I mean? I'm still not even, I'm separated, but I'm still not even divorced yet. We're waiting for it to go through. And they got into a text scuffle where he's like, maybe we should just leave it as it is because I just don't think, you know what I mean? If you want to pursue this, I'd rather just leave it as is. And he was really taken back by it because he's like, we've always had these conversations about it where we're on the same page. Very weird, right? Anyway, from there, this chick proceeds to harass him, stalk him. If I can't have you, no one else can. And it absolutely blows up. Like, cars getting keyed. She's like, I can see you with your kids right now. Like, they're in the park. Like, she's following him. He can't see her. He, you know, says stuff to the police. The police are like, okay, we can't find her, but we'll try and find her. Like, it was awful. Like, really, really. And then the other chick from the night, the one that picked up the jacket that night, she gets harassed too. And then the crazy chick burns the other chick's house down. She got dogs and cats. Dogs and cats are in the house. They die. Right. She burns her house down. So it's on. It's crazy. And then one day the other chick, she calls the police. She'd been shot. Someone shot her.
Right.
Anyway, basically one thing leads to another. Spoiler alert. This is absolutely a massive. I know you're not going to watch it, but if you're listening to this, just fast forward the next 2 minutes because it's spoiler alert. Basically, the harassment that was happening was from the jacket lady.
Right.
So when he left for work that morning and said goodbye to her, that chick was watching them because she's obsessed with him. She went into the house, killed her, took her body, took her phone, and when she took the phone and stuff, she started harassing him as the dead woman to make – and then because when all that crazy stuff was happening and then when the chicks like burnt her down her own house for the story because then she had nowhere to live, she had to move in with him, and that rekindled because they were both getting harassed by this chick. That rekindled their fucking relationship. And when she – you know, and then when she got shot, she shot herself in the leg.
Right.
That it was, and then because one thing led to another, because the original cops couldn't figure it out what was happening, and then someone else picked up the case. Like, and it's the best, man. The actual cop who picked up the case, like, black cowboy shirt, massive handlebar mustache, wearing a cowboy hat, and all the things. This guy saved the whole thing. Where he's like, this doesn't add up. He couldn't went to Carrie, like the chick that was supposedly harassing, went to their family. She's been missing. No one even checked on her.
Right.
She's been missing for 2 fucking years. And no one knows where the body is. So eventually there was a, you know, court case, blah, blah, and it was looking like the chick was going to get off. But because of no body. But then eventually they were able to get her. So she's in jail.
Okay.
Can you believe that? And it ended up being like a 4-year time frame where this other chick was pretending to be the dead person that she killed just so she could get closer to this fucking auto mechanic. Divorce more like this fucking nobody. It's thrilling. It was thrilling. And the fact that when the first cop that went, this doesn't make sense, and reopened it, fuck, it's really good. I think you'd still enjoy watching it. Anyway, spoiler. No, for you?
I just don't.
Yeah, that's okay. That's not I for you, but it was a good one. I
can't get into true crime.
There's a lot of true crime at the moment. This is actually a good one. I really liked it. But yeah, anyway.
I don't know. There's something about... I immediately just judge all the people in it of like, oh, you're a fucking idiot. You're an idiot.
Yeah.
You know, like, which is probably, harsh and sweeping, yeah.
But anyway. Brings us to our true crime, brings us to our crime show that we watched.
Yeah, let's talk about Mr. and Mrs. Smith first.
P.U.
I don't think it's as bad as other things that we've watched. I don't think Mr. and Mrs. Smith, I was thinking about it this morning when I was walking gym. I will rate it higher than True Detective season 4. But I do have a lot of issues with it. And I think it's not, I know you do as well. So it'd be really, I'm kind of keen to get into this conversation because I wanted to talk about it last night and you're like, save it for the pod. So now we're going to have that conversation. There's something, every writing book that you read tells you that you've got to establish the characters, that the characters are the most important thing.
Right.
Right? And that's what this episode was all about, was that you've got Mr. and Mrs. Smith and you're learning all about them. But the problem is, right, that the show that you're making is a detective, or not detective, secret agent action show. That's what it should be.
Mm.
It should be, they should be flying to Europe. They should be, you know, counter, they don't trust each other, but they also don't trust. And like at the end of this first episode, you get a like, and this, you know, coming up on season 1 of Mr. and Mrs. Smith, and you see all of that and it makes you even angrier about how the fact that nothing happened in this first episode. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, and I understand the argument from the writers would be, well we're, you know, establishing who they are.
I don't think they established who they were.
I don't
enough.
Think they did that at all. You know, right? What really? And you could have done, sorry, Bob, you could have done what you did in 55 minutes in 2. And like, at the risk of sounding like a boring old fucking writing lecturer, don't tell me, show me. I want to see these guys become close. I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to hear. And if you're going to show me why they're, you know, why Mrs. Smith is so like cautious and doesn't trust anybody, and why Mr. Smith, Donald Glover, is so like sort of, I don't know, what were his character traits? We didn't really get told.
Nothing.
But show us. Through flashbacks or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, I can't believe I'm using Reacher as an example of good writing, but in the first episode of season 1 of Reacher, to see why he is how he is and why his his relationship with his brother is so important, we have flashback scenes to him and his brother when they're kids. And it happens like twice.
We know
and
that's exactly it. Who Reacher
is. And then you just move on. It's like he was a young farm boy who, you know, like all-American boy who loved his brother and they were best mates, and then they joined the army together, and then like now they're both back from the war, and he, you know, like he loves his brother. That's really important. Remember, he loves his brother. But it would have taken up, what, 4 minutes of screen time, you know? This, we had 55 minutes of them like mumble, and it was like a mumblecore action show. Like these two are mumbling at each other. Show me. Show, don't tell. It's like the first piece of feedback you get in writing school. And it's not surprising that that's not being followed in this, because you've got Donald Glover writing the show, you know, which in some ways is always really interesting to me, because like a star's got a blank check to do whatever they want. And so a lot of the times those things are beautiful failures to watch. But this was dull.
So originally he was commissioned and started writing this show with Fleabag, right? God. And Fleabag walked away because of creative differences. So she didn't like the tone that he was going, and he was insistent on this tone, and she walked away. And then they got Maya in, Maya Erskine, I think her name is, who is from Pen 15, and she is incredible. If you've never seen Pen 15 or Penis, it's her and her best mate. They wrote this show. Basically, the show is set where they are in junior high and they're like 13 years old, but it's them. They're women in their like mid-late 20s, early 30s, playing themselves, but playing themselves when they're in junior high. So all the people around them are kids acting. It's fucking incredible.
Yep.
This show is phenomenal. So when I saw that she was in it, I was like, oh, she's great. Even when it's bad, she's great. What really pissed me off about this show was that the mumbling that you're talking about, it's so, this is so typical of a fucking actor having too much creative control, and no one has the balls to tell Donald Glover, this is shit, move on. Or like someone like Fleabag probably would have came in, as much as you don't like it, she would have come in and fixed that script up, man. She would have made it sharp. But he's so, all I saw was ego in this show. It, you know what, it was cutesy, right? They tried to do, basically you've got these two people that have become assassins, and their story is that they're a married couple. But in real, that, you know, they're a married couple to everyone else. But in real life, they're assassins who don't really know each other. And then I guess as the show goes on, they fall in love, right?
The premise is not bad.
The premise is great. That premise is great.
The premise is from...
Hang on. The awkwardness of them, what I'm trying to get to is the awkwardness of them trying to navigate. They're not dating. You know what I mean? Like, they're not dating.
Yeah.
But there's an awkwardness of them, like, getting to know each other that's written in the script, which is like, I don't know, do you want a large Coke or a medium Coke? Is that what you eat? Oh, my God, blah, 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 blah. It's like I'm watching a first date of two fucking annoying people being awkward. Boo. That's what it was.
Yeah. We timed it. It was 36 minutes into the show before any action happened.
Boring. Right? Boring. We've never done that before. This is the first time we've done that.
36 minutes before there's any sort of action.
Yeah.
And I know people will be like, oh, well, you know, can't you have you guys have got no attention span, blah, blah, blah. Nothing fucking happened. Nothing happens. The initial setup where, like, they both sat in front of a computer and they're asking them about who they are, that's fine.
Yeah.
I had no problem with that. Yeah. And then them bumping into each other in the safe house.
Yeah.
And being a little bit awkward at first. Yeah. Fine. That's like the first 6-7 minutes. And then we've got 30 minutes.
Of nothing.
Of nothing. Where they're like trailing this woman to get the package off her and stuff. And nothing's happening.
But nothing's happening in their growth either with each other. Because they don't have any...
No, you don't learn anything particularly...
But those two together as actors have no chemistry.
Yeah.
It might come.
Maybe there might be a little bit, but...
Hmm.
But the writing is bad because it's all bad writing of, like, I'm telling you about, like, I know the idea would be like, oh, well, we're learning about them through conversation, but it, but the conversation, like, the text of the script is so, it's just laying out, like, it's just laying out character traits of each other, of, like you just said, of, like, I'm a quiet kind of guy. I like to keep to myself.
Who says it's that?
Like, no one talks like that. You know what I mean? Like,
again, no one's editing this script properly.
Yeah. And again, like, I don't know how many episodes the show is, probably 10, 12. I don't know.
It'd been a movie.
Hour long episode. So it's 12 hours. And I just, like, I ask you, like, do you genuinely think that, like, could you've got 12 hours of fucking... Yeah. It was a movie.
That's the thing. It was a movie.
It was a movie.
And all that
and
fluff...
And it was much better than whatever the fuck this shit is.
All that fluff that we're complaining about wouldn't be there if they just did a movie.
And it sucks because Donald Glover is great. Sorry, I keep forgetting the woman's name.
Maya.
From Pen 15. Also great. And you can tell that they're great and, like, that they have the ability to be really good. And the cast looks fantastic, like, oh, in later episodes and stuff.
Yeah, heaps of people,
like,
in it.
It was so frustrating that absolutely nothing happens for, like, until about the 40-minute mark of this fucking episode, and then a couple of things happen. You know, they deliver what seems to be a cake. The cake ends up being a bomb. It kills a whole house of people, and then they have to run off, and they're sort of on the lam together and they're waiting instructions for their next hit or mission or whatever. That you could have cut the 30 minutes in between them meeting and that cake thing.
Mm.
Like, once they saw her, you know what I mean? Like, there's literally, I felt like we were in that cafe with them and their target for 30 fucking minutes.
And then on the seats outside, on the benches. Oh, God.
Yeah, sitting outside. Then they go to a play. She's in a play.
Dude,
like,
it was so unnecessary.
They're following around. There's so much fucking fat on this that needs to be cut off. Like, I don't Look, we all know why these shows are so long and take so fucking long, and why there's so much bullshit is because the streamers are telling them to go as long as you want, because the longer it fucking is, the more people will watch their streamer, and that's how they fucking sell shares and show their shareholders that they're being profitable and stuff. But at the end of the day, and I'm getting closer and closer to this, I'll just cancel all these fucking streaming services, you know what I mean, and just fucking rent shit when I need to. Just go back to the old rental system of like essentially going to a Blockbuster and renting movie. You know what I mean? Like that's where I'm at now. It's like I'm not going to pay you $30 a month for this shit. Hire a fucking editor. Hire a script editor. Hire a fucking film editor and cut some shit up, man. This show should be a movie. It should be an hour and a half fucking movie. And I think if it was, it would move so much more quickly and you would actually see the strengths of the people involved in the show. But no, it's the same thing. Dude. I feel like we say the same thing every week, Pinky. You know what I mean? It's the same thing we do every night, Pinky.
Yeah.
Watch a show that's too fucking long.
It's fucking Rotten Tomatoes rating is too high for this garbage.
What is it?
It's like... because it hasn't really been out there long enough. The initial one is 89 or 7.6 out of 10. But it'll go down. This is the first thing that we watched where, because I actually like doing this and you don't like doing it, then I'm surprised that you did it, where when you checked what the time was left and you fast-forwarded through all that fat and then when action started, we started watching. Like, so we fast-forwarded through like 8 minutes and then got to a place where something happened and we watched that.
The dialogue was...
And then fast-forwarded it again. Like, we've never done that before. And I was like, honestly, fast-forward it. I can't watch this.
The show and the dialogue was so predictable that we could skip forward 5 minutes. We hadn't missed anything.
No, I missed nothing.
Like, they were still talking about the same thing.
Oh, God, it's not cute.
Yeah.
It's so shit. And then
it was all to build up. Like, it was all to try and build up their relationship, right?
But then I saw the trailer for episode 2 and I was like, this show should have started from episode 2. It should have just started there.
But you know what? Like, here's a simple fix. When they're in the safe house and she's on the bed and Donald Glover comes in all fucking cut and buff to say goodnight, you just have her go, oh. You just have her like be like, whoa, at like how fucking hot he is. But she doesn't.
Mm.
She sits on the bed and goes, you've lost your shirt.
Who says that?
Yeah.
No one says that. That's dumb.
Especially when, you know, a international movie star, handsome man walks into your room glistening. You know what I mean? If you're a straight woman, also, who's going to end up fucking him anyway because we see it in the trailer, just show me her being attracted to him.
Also, they're supposed to be workmates and it's inappropriate that he comes with his shirt off.
Oh, God.
Anyway, I actually give this half a grump because it really pissed me off. I hated it. The half grump is because I love Maya, and that's it. But I'm not going to watch this show again.
I'm going to give my standard rating of one grump.
I'm done half. Like, can't be fucked. I just can't be fucked with the cutesiness of like them showing us these two people trying to get to know each other, dating, and like people who don't. And this is another thing that's an issue. Donald Glover has been with this chick for years. You can't write what a first date is like. You can't because you've never been on one in 10, 12 years, right?
But it's not a first date. And like the aim of...
Well, the puppy's on the couch being all weird, shaking.
She's asleep.
She's asleep?
Yeah.
Okay. Just trauma.
She's fine.
Okay.
The aim of this episode was to show that these two are attracted to each other. And what I'm saying is it could have been done in one shot.
100%.
Of him walking into the room, no shirt on, her going, you know, or vice versa.
Yeah, 100%. Right?
And then then you're like, oh, they want to fuck each other. Cool, let's move on.
Move on. Okay, let's move on.
Which we'll do in this podcast. So we watched, what's the name of this thing? We Are the World.
The Greatest Night in Pop.
Okay.
No, it is The Greatest Night in Pop.
So fucking there hyperbolic. I really enjoyed this documentary.
I loved it.
I really enjoyed watching it. I'm going to let Cal go first because she loved it more than I did.
Nah, I just loved
it. But fuck, there's so much hyperbole from the people involved in this. It's insane.
It's so good because there's a sign on the door that says, leave your egos at the door. But there's so many egos. Like, so before this came out, I was obsessed with this song and I could watch the film clip and tell you who every singer was. Like, I come along and go, Diane Warwick, Kenny Loggins. you know, like I'm just Steve Perry. I just fucking love it. It's just my favorite. And just watching a documentary about it, a lot of stuff I didn't know that they filmed it after the American Music Awards. So at like midnight, people are going to the studio record and they didn't finish at like 7 a.m. Prince was supposed to be there and he didn't show up, but he was like, Sheena E. was there. They were like, so Sheena, is Prince showing up? And she called Prince and he's like, who else is there? Who else is there? Like he's like wants to see if it's cool enough for him to go to. And then when he doesn't show up, it's clear that they're not going to give Sheena a chance to sing. Mm. And she goes, yeah, I guess I was used here. I'm leaving. But I love – how good's Bruce Springsteen, man? He's so fucking cool.
Yeah.
I loved him.
For like 65 or 70-year-old man, he still looks – if that was your grandpa, you'd be like, that's a cool grandpa.
And then when he came out, like because Bob Dylan was struggling – you know, singing and with all the people and the lyrics, you could tell he's very either very high, very awkward. And he did a line and then Bruce comes out and he's like, yes, like really lifted him up. It was beautiful. I just really love that kind of stuff.
Do you want to hear my impersonation of Bob Dylan?
Sure.
Take one?
Sure.
We are the world. We are the
world. Make a better day.
No, that's the final
you
one.
Me.
It's they go for him to do a solo tape, but like he's always works on his own and stuff. And there's 50 people in the room, so they shove everyone out, and then he like goes to do a take, and it's literally this, like,
it's really fun, man. And like Cyndi Lauper, like I just like how he's like,
she's got an amazing voice. That's the thing. It's like, oh, holy fuck, Cyndi Lauper might have the best voice of everyone in this room.
Completely underrated, yeah. Right? But Lionel Richie, I just like.
And Huey Lewis has got a good voice too, man. It's strong.
The whole story about how, because I think
he's great. He comes across as
so good.
The most normal. Yeah. Him and Bruce Springsteen come across as the most normal, together, nice people in the whole thing.
They really do. Like he. And I didn't know that the whole song was choreographed where certain lines had to suit certain voices and that's how people got given their line. It wasn't a you're better than this person. It was more about like the aesthetics behind it, like an orchestra, like instruments coming in for a musical score. It was very fucking interesting, very beautiful. But I did love how Lionel Richie was like, there's a few characters who – there's people that are trouble. Like people that are trouble. Cyndi Lauper's trouble. Stevie Wonder is trouble.
I didn't think that didn't come across to me at all. In fact, Stevie Wonder saved the song by showing Bob Dylan in a Bob Dylan voice how to sing.
But I think the issue that I loved is that I think I was telling you about where Stevie Wonder, they were calling him going, hey, can you help write the song? Can you help write the song? And it seems like the general gist is that Stevie Wonder's pretty bad at texting you back. Like he's just one of those people. And then 3 weeks later, he just shows up and goes, oh, were you recording? And they're like, we've already done it. And then the Cyndi Lauper thing really made me laugh where she was like, you know, I don't know if I'm going to do it because my boyfriend said it's not going to be very good.
Yeah, my boyfriend doesn't think it's going to be a hit.
He doesn't think it's going to be a hit. And this is like on the way or at the studio or whatever. And Lionel's like.
It was at the Music Awards.
Oh, the Music Awards.
Yeah. It all centers around the American Music Awards of 1984 because everyone's going to be in town. So like essentially there's this like charity organization who have the idea, this is one thing in the documentary that doesn't really get touched on at all and I think is a bit shit. The idea was Harry Belafonte's.
Yeah.
Who is he's a big socialist, he's a Cuban guy, and it was his idea. He had seen Live Aid happen in Britain and he was like, we should do this in America. That's why he got Bob Geldof across, who does like sort of the coach's speech before they before they record the song.
There's a lot of kids dying in Africa.
The biggest fucking downer in the world.
I know.
Eh?
Everyone's having a good time.
Hey, everyone, shut the fuck up and listen to me now.
It was really interesting.
But he's right. I mean, Geldof is right. It's like, this is why this song's being made, because children are fucking dying of starvation on the daily. And you can see guys like Billy Joel and Kenny Rogers like really be like, ugh. Like the wind gets taken out of this. I was like, oh, fuck, yeah, okay, right. Yeah. I thought it's a very cute story. It's a very cute documentary. I just thought that more could have been. It was very much like the Lionel Richie story, you know, and I feel like Lionel probably was an executive producer on this or something. There was no mention of Harry Belafonte and his involvement in this, in like getting it off the ground. He approached
Lionel and... interview him because he's dead.
Yes, but there would be archival footage. They had fucking Kenny Rogers talking from the grave at the end of the documentary about what a great experience it was.
Kenny Rogers dead.
Yeah.
Huh. I don't know. I mean, at the end of the, like, people kind of, you know, at the end of the night, someone actually kind of mentioned him and they started singing when the, you know, the lion sleeps tonight, was it in the tongue? Yeah. They started, you know, and he, and it seemed, the impression I got from Bonafonte is that he was very shy and was a bit embarrassed.
Yeah, but just like, just something of like, yeah, this was Harry's idea and then we took it and ran with it. But Lionel Richie kind of, like, Lionel Richie seems fine, but there was very much an attitude of like, I did this. This was me. It was like, well, you wrote the song and the song is fine. But also, fine.
Michael Jackson came in and like wrote the song also.
Yeah.
And Michael Jackson, like, it's so crazy. He is so good. As much as like he's, all the other things about him is just not okay. And
a pedophile.
Yeah, like awful. And that his kids are definitely not his kids. I don't know what the fuck's going on there. But like he was there the whole time. Like he is, you can see Michael Jackson is an absolute perfectionist and there's a reason why he was Michael Jackson, because he just could not rest.
The
like,
shots they had of him doing his vocals on his own was pretty, I mean, that was incredible. Pretty amazing. And they, like, if you love music, there was a part of me that's like, you know, I'm 44, so this song was the biggest fucking song in the world when I was like 6 years old. So there was a part of me that was like, oh, fuck. Like for a year of my life, this song was the song that I heard the most, you know? Like it was just played everywhere all the time. And because it had a kind of like crossover appeal, I suppose, of like pop people were on it, but also like, you know, Springsteen and Dylan and fucking Kenny Loggins, I suppose, and Steve Perry, I suppose, the kind of rock people were on
Steve
there.
Steve Perry.
Steve Perry's so funny, man. He looks like the lead singer of every fucking cover band in Australia.
How bad did Kenny Loggins look now?
The face look. Yeah, just so much plastic
surgery.
Dude,
so much plastic. I actually thought that was Steve Perry because, like, oh, my God, Kenny Loggins just looked awful. But I liked how there was other people that were supposed to be in it and they're on tour and stuff. They couldn't do it. Like, but also Madonna was asked and she didn't show up. Because ego. And this was like True Blue Madonna. You weren't even fucking living, you know, Papa Don't Preach Madonna.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I don't know. It was as big a hit as it was. It's pretty uncool. I think like it's for charity and everything, but I think someone like Madonna, who was always so savvy when it came to her image, probably looked at this and was like, nah, it's not for me. What I'm amazed at, and I know everyone's going to roll their eyes, where's Paul McCartney? Where's George Harrison?
Well, they weren't around because it was in America. Like that, they couldn't be there that night. I don't know.
Maybe because it's the American Music Awards. Yeah, they weren't. Might, yeah.
But also this was an American thing. They wanted it to be
America, like, right?
Yeah, that was the whole point. Enough. And also they wanted, because Belafonte's thing was like, you know, people are raising money for black children in Africa. Where are all the black people? You know, like it was a bit more of a, you know, like Huey Lewis stood in for Prince because he didn't show up.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of the white people in this were filling in for people who didn't show up, you know, or they were,
well,
but also
Quincy Jones is like on the record, of being pretty racist dude towards white musicians. Like he just doesn't think they're as good.
Yeah.
He's like called out the Beatles of being terrible musicians and stuff. Like he's militant. He's a militant black man.
But
you
then
know?
Yeah, so, I've had people like,
because even in the documentary, was it Huey Lewis that gave him a lift? No, it was one of the studio, it was one of the engineer guys.
Yeah, that's
it was
right.
Like they finished at 8 a.m. and like, I would love to be this famous. This is kind of how I was when I was drinking in my 20s and 30s. Of like, I don't have a car.
Yeah.
I don't have a car. Well, how are you going to get home? I don't know. Fine, I'll give you a lift, you know? But it's fucking Quincy Jones. So this engineer gives Quincy Jones a lift home and he's like, you know, a lot of those white boys came to play today. You know what I mean? Of like, he just didn't trust them to, you know, Springsteen and Huey Lewis, man, they really brought it. It's like, yeah, dude.
Yeah.
They're fucking professional
music. And Huey Lewis
was a studio musician. He was a studio guy for like 12 years.
And he didn't even know about.
He would do backing. He started off as a harmonica player and then a saxophonist or saxophonist. Then he did backing vocals and then eventually came out and did lead and formed Huey Lewis and the News. But that was just like a pub band. And like,
what was fun about that?
He was great, man. He came across so well. And like, even now to this day, like, you can feel that he was genuine about, like, I shouldn't be in this room.
Because
Cyndi Lauper says that, and I didn't believe her.
She shouldn't have. Well, this is the thing.
She was like, I felt so, you know, like at the end of the documentary where she's like, I felt so, like, blown away that I was in the room with all these people. I'm like,
but Huey Lewis was genuinely wasn't supposed to be there. It was because Prince didn't show up, and that particular line.
He was meant to be there. He wasn't meant to have a solo.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. He wasn't meant to have a solo. So because Prince didn't show up, they were like, okay, we need someone that has a male soloist voice that can hit XYZ notes. Mm. And Steve Perry said, you need to check out this kid here, Huey. Need to check him out. Quincy Jones had no idea who he was.
This kid. And then, he looked about 55 years old.
And then he comes in going, and if you just believe, there's nowhere we can fall. Wow, 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 wow. Realize I'm not a child.
Cyndi really.
They had to stop because Cyndi Lauper, bracelets were making noise. Yeah. It was so good.
But she really, what's great about watching that as well is that she really like uses up her line. Like the,
dude.
It's like, well, there's no way that anyone would have told her to do that, but she
And Steve Perry, man.
Steve Perry.
He's so, like, his voice is
Everyone's got a great voice. It's so funny to see Paul Simon and Billy Joel in there as well. They're such nerds. I love how Billy Joel gets out of his car. Like, they are nerds, man. They're fucking, you know, they're piano guys. Like, Paul Simon's a folky. Billy Joel's a fucking piano guy. And when Billy Joel gets out of his car with Christie Brinkley and he has to like kiss her in front of the in front of the cameras to show the like, yep, that's me. I'm dating her. I'm dating Christie Brinkley. Yep, me, Billy Joel, weird little fucking Long Island guy.
He was like the first weird looking guy to get a model. He started a trend. When they redid the We Are the World song for Nathie.
He looked pretty cool, I've got to say, with the beard and stuff. He didn't look too bad.
No, I don't think he looked weird. When they redid the song with Nathie. They redid the song.
When?
They redid We Are the World in 2010 when there was a really bad earthquake in Haiti.
Oh, God. Did you know this? No, I don't know.
Earthquake in Haiti. They did it. And it was, I'm not saying it right. Haiti. Yep. Yeah. It was Wycliffe
Jean.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So he got everyone together.
One time.
Right? Look at the difference of like people. Like you got Tina Turner.
It's going to suck. It'll suck so hard. But tell me who was in the 2010.
Well, it was 14 years ago. So it takes a while to get used to you. It was.
Fair.
So like this one here in the 80s, we've got Michael Jackson. We've got Bruce Springsteen. Billy Joel, Tina Turner, Diana Ross.
You know the roster.
Stevie Wonder. You know who showed up. You know who came to
Huey
play.
Huey Lewis was on the bench.
We have Justin Bieber. Ugh. Nicole Scherzinger. Jennifer Hudson, who I rate.
Don't know.
Tony Bennett. Josh Groban.
Tony Bennett, old swing singer Tony Bennett.
Josh Groban. Michael Jackson, stock footage. He's then followed by Janet. Then Barbara Streisand, Miley Cyrus, Enrique Iglesias, Jamie Foxx, Pink. Usher, Celine Dion, who I love, Fergie, Jonas Brothers, Lil Wayne, T-Pain, and then Kanye West, blah, 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 a bunch of other people.
Is there any indie or rock singers there at all?
No. Maybe. Santana.
Jesus Christ. Is there even like a Rob Thomas from Matchbox 20? Like, is there anyone who like... Fucking, what's his name from Maroon 5?
There's a lot of people here whose names I don't know. So maybe Josh Madden?
No. That's
Mayer? I like Mayer.
Madden's from
Nicole
fucking,
Richie was there.
Madden's from fucking...
Vince Vaughn was there.
Vince Vaughn. Oh, why was Dan Aykroyd there?
Oh, because he was just there, I think. Yeah, he just wanted to be involved. Hey, I need to go to the toilet. We've gone an hour, haven't we?
Yeah, literally an hour.
Okay. this is
un- Kelly cannot hold her piss in for longer than an hour.
I'm in pain. So I actually love this so much. I'm going to give it 4.5.
Whoa.
I'm going to give it 4.5 because I loved it so hard. I think the other half, yeah, I would have loved to have had more interviews with other people. Maybe they said no, but more Cyndi Lauper, Diana Ross, like, let's get more people in. I want to hear Cyndi Lauper
did Talking Heads for it. But yeah, I think it's fun. I think it's worth watching. I'll give it, it's a fun ride. For the documentary, 3.5 stars. I just wish there was a bit more of the Belafonte stuff at the beginning.
True. Yeah.
Give credit where it's due. But outside of that, it's great. A lot of fun. Like, it's worth it just to watch the Dylan stuff.
Can you end the podcast? Because I'm going to whelp myself. I love everybody. Anyway, thank you
love
so
you
much.
Guys. Love you.
No. I mean, you can end it on your own. Keep talking, but I'm going to go to the toilet and you can end it on your own.
Okay.
Okay. I love you all. Bye.
Yeah, would have liked. It's worth watching for just the Dylan stuff because it's crazy and insane and truly an example of just celebrity gone mad in a recording studio and gives you a really good idea of what producers actually do on records. They're like they're a part engineer, obviously, and they listen, they need to be a good musician and they need to be able to hear things in the music, but they've also got to be a dad, a best friend, a psychologist, a nurse, like... You've got to coax the egos of these musicians so much. And the Dylan stuff is hilarious. It's worth watching for that. So 3.5 grumps for me, which is a much higher rating than I thought I was going to give it. But it's a lot of fun. Good documentary. I think it's on Netflix. So check that out. Guys, our listenership goes up every day. It's kind of insane. And also... I kind of get taken aback looking at the figures every couple of days. So I really appreciate you guys sticking around, listening yourselves, and obviously telling other people about the show. If you can continue to do that, that would be great. Our rating on Apple Podcasts has gone up because you guys went on and did ratings for us. So I really appreciate that. That's up to 4.3 now, I think, instead of 4.1. So if you can keep doing that, because we got that one negative review that fucked our score. So you can jump on there if you think we deserve it. Give us 5 stars. It helps us get out to more people. And that's why we do it. We want people to listen to the podcast. That's why we record it and put it up on the internet for you to listen to. That's Kelly flushing the toilet, if you can hear that. Anyway, love you guys for doing that. Kelly's already said I love you. I love you guys as well. Love Kelly. And we'll talk to you next week.